In the Spotlight on Afternoon Talk with Ashraf Garda. All the big names making big money and even bigger headlines. Only on SAFM.
Okay, so if I mention the name Nadia Bilczyk, what would you say? Well, you have your own thoughts, okay? But here's the bottom line. Mnet, CNN, and a whole lot of other things from South Africa to around the world. And the good news now, she's in studio. So, Nadia, good chatting to you, and thanks for allowing me to put you in the spotlight.
It is such a pleasure. I have been listening to you whenever I come back to Johannesburg, and I had to tell you this. My mother, who is listening now, listens to you every Sunday, and she takes notes. Her notes on Douglas Kruger last week were so comprehensive. I cannot wait to read his
book. Well, I'm going to tell Douglas about it, but I think you're right, and I'm glad your mother does that, because here's the story. That particular Sunday show, it's almost like I'm being interviewed now. That Sunday show, for me, which is a marketing and branding show, is what I call a two-hour on-air free consultation in marketing.
It's a masterclass.
Absolutely.
And so I podcast that. So you've been teaching me. So I'm delighted to be here in conversation with the man.
Absolutely, yeah. So what are you doing? I mean, so you don't live here, right?
I live in Atlanta, Georgia, but my mother lives in Johannesburg. And I like to say I have two homes. This will always be home. It is in my heart and in my soul. And I am here as an ambassador for the SOS Children's Villages South Africa.
So that's why you've come. I mean, besides visiting your mum, you've come in for some specific work.
I came for them because in 1996, I hosted an event at the Cape Town SOS Children's Villages with Mandela. And that was a moment in my life.
96.
He was opening the villages. I was the MC. I got to hold hands with him, meet him, and open the first Cape Town SOS village. Fast forward, Stuart Wilms from SOS tracks me down through social media and says, Nadia, will you come and host our global conference in June of this year in Austria? Wow. So I got to meet people from 133 countries involved in SOS.
And it just shows you how one meeting changes people's
networking,
lives and changes
you never
destiny.
Know. Yeah. You know, the connection, and I speak a lot in my speaking training about connection, conversation, collaboration. Yes, we could have done this over the phone, but meeting you face to face, you never know long term, is it that your child's interested in a career at CNN or whether
he or she may just do that.
Exactly. But you know, you never know about life and connection. So there was Stuart Wilms. He remembered me. I said, Stuart, you may not recognize me from 1996. I may look a little different, but I hosted this extraordinary conference and met people who are involved in this extraordinary work from around the world.
And how did you get to, at that stage in 96, so Mandela was the president.
I was on
what
Mnet.
What were you doing?
I was an Mnet presenter.
What were you doing? A show on presenting on Mnet.
Exactly. In fact, I did Essence Talkback even. I did a show for the Indian community called Essence Talkback, and I was on Mnet as a presenter. And
that's
somebody said, will you come and host this event in Cape Town? And I just remember so clearly sitting there with the head of SOS Children's Villages Worldwide and Mandela, 1996. And people met him at that event and just cried. But I can say I look back at that moment. I'm sure you've got Ashraf Garda moments. That was a pivotal moment in my life. But also the work they do so extraordinary because they don't just house or clothe or feed a child. They look for a home. You know, the motto is no child should grow up alone. So it's more than just an orphanage. It's a whole way of being and a lifestyle and a nurturing of the essence of the child and children who otherwise would be enormously disadvantaged.
Okay, we're going to talk about the Children's Village, the SOS Children's Village, a little more in a moment. I'm going to say with the Mandela part, not so much about Mandela, but so you've obviously met and mixed and interviewed many people in the world, like I have. I'm a different type of people.
Yes.
But one of the things I teach myself is to respect people who are famous, but not to be overawed by them. Okay. So how do you then avoid being, you know, part of the autograph groupie, the groupie crowd? How do you get that right?
Ashraf, on Monday morning, I'm going to be speaking for Unique Speakers Bureau. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking about exactly that. I'm saying when I interviewed Anthony Hopkins and I walked in and there's Anthony Hopkins, so famous. And I remember having that moment of he's so famous, who am I? And I teach this technique called accessing your positive emotional memory database. And that's a moment when you feel slightly intimidated that you collect positive stories and successes of your own. And then you access them. So I'm about to interview Anthony Hopkins. And the journalist just before said, oh, Mr. Hopkins, he is so sheet. My interview was so sheet. And I thought, I don't want a sheet interview. And I remember walking in and going, he may be much more famous. He may be much wealthier, but I am a valuable human being. And that's because I accessed my positive emotional memory database. And I remember sitting there and going, in this moment, we are equals. And it was a wonderful interview.
Well, here's my one, and I completely agree with you. Here's my one, that in terms of interviews, and there's cricket on the go now, so it's very relevant, that is, a batsman needs a good bowler to be able to hit the ball for a four. You need a good ball to be able to do just that. So there's this, at that point in time, there's a relationship you have. Although you're on opposite sides, in effect, you are partners in that game.
In that moment. But it's interesting you say that, because is your bowl also your own attitude to self? So what do you say? You know, you're Ashraf Garda. I walk in and I know you're very well known in South Africa. And I go, you have interviewed some remarkable people. There's always that moment that says, am I worthy? You know, it's well known as something called the imposter syndrome. And I do executive coaching at high, high levels. And people often have that very feeling. But what I remind you to do is dialogue with self, which is to say, yes, you may be, but let me focus on my story instead of only focusing on the wealthier, the richer.
Because,
powerful.
Here's the point. You can't, because you represent listeners or viewers, you can't undersell, isn't it? If you feel less of yourself,
yes,
you do
you said
a disservice
that so well.
To the people.
Because think what happens, the dynamic. If someone walks in and feels less than, and that works in sales too. If the dynamic says you're less than, you go, why are they feeling insecure? It goes back to the whole thing, we buy into other people's confidence, which is why in sales, in presence, in own your space, and everything I teach and speak about, the first thing is how you feel about yourself and the level of energy you exude. Now, that doesn't mean arrogance, right?
Not at all. I'm going to go through Own Your Space list because I love reading. Absolutely. Nadia Bilczyk is with me. She is the lady in the spotlight. Nothing stopping your mum calling in, by the way. and the rest of the family and friends, of course, right? Whether they're in the USA or as in Atlanta, as we discussed, or even in South Africa, 0891-104207. You can tweet me. If you aren't doing that, it's important you tweet to hashtag Afternoon Talk, then tweet to Ashraf Garda as well as to SFM Radio. And if you are SMSing, it's 34701. Okay, so we've sort of fast-forwarded with the SMS. As Children's Village, and then the Mandela Factor, and something to do with Atlanta, which means CNN. But I thought, let's just go back to where it all started in terms of what is it you've done? I mean, four or five career milestones in terms of what you do. So Mnet, you threw in. Just start back to all
Mnet,
that.
Mnet, I was a presenter. And in fact, okay. Ashraf, coming here today, I once hosted Highfeld Radio for about a month or
did
so.
You?
And I
wow.
looked at you with such awe because we had to do everything ourselves. We didn't have an engineer. And I remember doing the buttons and one day someone's wrong music playing through. So today at the SABC brought up many memories. But I actually started off doing movies. You may not know this about me, Ashraf, but I have been in 5 feature films. But what you really may not know is I've died in all of them. I have
had my
throat slit. I've had my back slashed. I've been shot by Gary Busey on the island of Skiathos in Greece. Now, I know you've also had quite a few incarnations of your career in life. And I think part of getting to our age, I'm making an assumption here, is that you reinvent, right? You constantly reinvent.
So movies was your start.
Movies, and in fact, I was being interviewed on a South African show, and Penny Smythe was interviewing me about a movie I'd done. And I remember thinking, this is so boring. I'd much rather be doing the interview than be interviewed.
Is that what you felt?
That's what started. I felt that.
Why did you feel that?
Because there was something about, she was asking all these questions about the movie. Can I be very risque and tell you what we spoke about?
Well, go ahead.
I was doing a candid camera movie.
Okay.
And part of the candid camera movie was we had to sell condoms in small, medium, and large.
Okay.
Is that too risque or not?
Go ahead. You've already started talking.
Penny Smythe said, and I was telling her that, you know, you ask certain people from certain countries what size they want. And she said, you know, isn't it fascinating that you ask, and I mentioned a country, and they always say large. So she said, well, let's all go off to that country, shall we? Anyway, by the way.
And your mother's listening, so we'll move on anyway. All right, but that was, so that for you was important, where you actually felt, you could do a job as an interviewer.
I wanted to be the interviewer. Then I went to Mnet. And I was so lucky because it was a time at Mnet that we had continuity announcers, presenters. Mm-hmm. And I learned so much about being in front of the camera, about doing media training. And I was once doing an interview with a group of executives for Mnet. And I thought these people were so charismatic before the interview. But when it came to being on air, they lost something. And I know you've seen people like that. So I started doing media training. And that's how I started on Cue. So I started media training and presentation skills training, and then became very fulfilled by the training. So when I moved to Atlanta, Georgia in 1997, I was on Mnet and I had on Cue, and I went from being well known to nothing.
Okay, so the question then, why would you move?
So my
You had Mandela the year before. I mean, you know, you guys were together. Like, why would you then move?
Ashraf, is this psychotherapy? Was it an interview? Because I still don't know. No.
So why?
I still wonder. So my husband actually got a job offer. He got a job offer in Atlanta, Georgia.
Okay.
And CNN was there. So he said, you know, we can always come back. And in fact, Mnet said if I came back within the year, I could still come back. And it seemed like an adventure. And we thought, you know, why not?
Hmm.
Ironically, the job my husband went for didn't work out so well. And he now manages my business.
Is that what happened?
And
wow.
Then, you know, CNN was there. So I gave my demo tape to the security guard at CNN. And within a month, I was anchoring for something called the CNN Airport Network.
And let's get this right. I mean, CNN at that stage, I think its claim to fame for all of us was around the Gulf, the time of the Gulf War, which is a couple of years before that. I got my dates.
Well, what
right.
really put Atlanta on the map was the Olympic Games of 1996.
Course, yeah.
That was huge. And that's when my husband saw Atlanta and got the job offer, and it seemed like such an extraordinary place to be. So it's a growing city. It's an interesting city. There are a lot of South Africans in Atlanta, but it will never be.
And that first job at CNN was what you mentioned, travel?
So no, I started working for the Airport Network. Now,
oh,
at
airport.
The time,
okay, right.
There was a special network for CNN in airports.
Okay,
because
I see.
After 9/11, that changed. After 9/11, we streamed regular CNN. But at the time, they felt the travelers didn't want to see anything that was depressing. And if there was a plane crash, why should they see it? So there was a network in the airports. So I anchored overnight shifts for the CNN Airport Network.
With a very captive audience who are probably quite bored.
Yes,
I'm waiting for the next
exactly.
flight.
Exactly.
And watching
And then
everything.
I hosted some shows on CNN International. There was Around the World and Show Buzz and various other things. I always say I think I learned more about South Africa and was more proud of being South African living in Atlanta, because something about being immersed here, when I didn't see the miracle of the transition, and truly a miracle. Being there and getting perspective and looking at countries like Syria or Libya or Egypt, you suddenly saw the miracle of South Africa.
Very, very good point, yeah. So in terms of and in terms of what you're doing now?
So now I actually work as an editorial producer for the weekend morning shows on CNN Domestic, which is not the CNN you see. And then I also occasionally will host a segment. So last weekend I hosted one very profound one, Ashraf, on hangover cures around the world. And I did one the week before on Christmas traditions around the world. You may not know, but in Japan, Christmas is synonymous with Kentucky Fried Chicken.
Are you
they
serious?
Call it Krisimasu
wow.
wa Kentucky. Talk about you're in the marketing world, Ashraf.
Yeah, wow.
So in the 70s, expats would go to Japan and there wasn't turkey over Christmas, so they'd get Kentucky Fried Chicken. Well, KFC thought that's so brilliant. Let's market it as Krisimasu wa Kentucky. Christmas with
so,
Kentucky.
So it's become a whole national
now,
psyche.
Now, Japanese who are not religious, they may be Buddhist or Shinto, but they're not Christians, will line up around the block over Christmas to get their Kentucky
yeah.
Fried Chicken.
Wow.
So that's the kind of segment I do with a lot of research, a little bit of a difference, a bit of a twist. But I am now mainly behind the scenes, and then my other complete life is as a professional speaker.
Okay, we'll talk about the speaking in a second. Chatting to Nadia Bilcik, and by the way, it's always open to you calling in, okay? If you just want to listen, that's absolutely fine. But if you wish to call in, 0891-104-207, as I put this, South African born, have I got that right?
South African born, bred.
Now living in Atlanta, and has done that for, well, about 20-odd years or so, right? So, just to confirm about the CNN part, I think at some stage I chatted to one of the CNN presenters, and they made the point that if you're on CNN International, then the whole world sees you.
Right. We are
but
domestic.
CNN
we're
domestic,
North America. Correct.
So CNN International only, they're almost anonymous in the USA.
That is what is so
That's
fascinating.
True,
if you come to CNN Center, and Ashraf, I hope you get to come there one day, you'll see the CNN International, my friends from South Africa will see the anchors. They go, that's so-and-so. But in America, they aren't
they're not known, yeah,
very
yeah.
well known.
Unless, do they ever double up? I mean, how many of them
do that? Sometimes in the early morning, we'll broadcast some of CNN International. Or if there's breaking news and it's an international story, we may simulcast or simulcast and vice versa. But it is interesting because I work for, and of course, when people hear my accent, sometimes they assume I'm with international, but I have Americanized certain things at this stage.
And how fulfilling has that then been for you over this journey where your husband now manages you? He was going to go for another job. Things have turned full circle for you guys.
It's been interesting, Ashraf. You know, as a speaker who really tries to motivate people, I know the cliche term of motivational speaker, I talk a lot about presence, and all presence and all influence starts with self and self-awareness. It's been a tough journey. It's not an easy thing to leave home, to leave your identity. And in networking, I say, what do you leave most? You and I met years ago through mutual friends. When you move to another country, another city, another continent, what do you miss out on? You miss out on that organic network. So to rebuild that takes a lot of time, a lot of effort, a lot of energy. Have I done it over 20 years? Yes. And I now sometimes when I teach and train, I go backwards and I try and decode what I did. But there's been ups and many downs, and that's life, right?
Well,
resilience.
You right and say question to you, right? Someone wants to know about how do I contact CNN about programs. Probably, I would say go to the website, quite honestly.
Correct.
It's probably the best way to connect with them or even use social media. So in terms of the speaking that you do, so you're an editor for a program.
I am
CNN,
what we
right?
call a editorial producer. So I guest produce. If there's a breaking news topic, I'll find guests, I'll think about what questions, I'll put elements together. So it's what we call guest producing. So, of course, been fascinating over the election. I have many friends on both sides,
whatever your
political views are. And it's very stimulating, and no situation's ever the same, because depending on what's going on. So it's been, and it's a remarkable organization just because it's so broad and so global, and your access is remarkable. You know, you can book a guest in Paris with a studio and a car and someone in London, and it's just a remarkable
organization. It's a calling card. I mean, I know you probably don't know this, but during the time of the 2010 World Cup, CNN International used me as – they wanted a presenter or someone who knew soccer well, and I did, but someone who knew socio-political issues in the country. So they used me – I think extensively.
Had you and I been more on each other's radar, I would have had you.
That.
So hopefully, I have a chance
to never know.
So again.
But I mean, here's the bottom line from being, you know, chatting. Or Robin Kerner, of course, I chatted to very often, and a husband who was the bureau chief
Kim
in
Norgard,
South Africa.
Yes.
But people like Aisha Cisse and Pedro Pinto. But here's the point. Even, and you know, those interviews are like 4 minutes, right? That's max.
That's it.
But just 3-4 minutes. And you would get 5 SMSs from people from the most obscure countries in the world, from Sweden to Hong Kong, to say, listening to you. And that's the power, right?
Although the power of the internet, my segment that I did on hangover cures, one of the most disturbing hangover cures, interestingly enough, is in Vietnam, where people disturbingly believe, some, that rhino horn can be hangover cure. And I got an email from a South African who'd seen the segment online, and she was very upset that I'd even mentioned it. And I said to her, I'd mentioned how disturbing it was because rhino are an endangered species and it is illegal. But even the fact that I'd mentioned it, and I appreciated that she told me, but as you say, you never know who's listening. And more than that, in the age of social media, you know, I post all my segments online. So I'm sure many of you, when you did the World Cup, were online. So CNN.com, they live forever.
Yeah.
So this moment in radio might live forever in one form or another. And that's what's changed.
Absolutely. So then in terms of the talking, what do you speak about?
I speak about persuasion and influence. I have 2 keynotes that I'm doing on Monday. One is called Light the Fire, Tips and Techniques to Build Rapport Every Time You Communicate.
That's the one you're doing with the USB speaker.
Yes.
With you. Okay.
And think about it. I really take what someone like you does, Ashraf Garda, what you automatically do, what you instinctively do, which is build rapport, make people feel comfortable. And I decode it and teach it. And then I'm doing one called Maximize Your Presence, Inspire, Persuade, Influence. What are the things, what are the nuggets, what can we teach? And I heard someone earlier that you had on talking about leadership. Can leadership be taught? She was wonderful.
Well, she is.
Really,
Dr.
superb.
Stoli Corza, yes.
She was
absolutely
excellent. But, you know, part of it, and she said, are communication skills. So can we teach leadership? Can we teach, but we can improve communication skills dramatically. And we can teach people technique. And the acronym I like to use is, we can teach people how to be heard. H-E-A-R-D.
So where then do you see yourself in the world right now? I mean, you've mentioned things. When I say see yourself, like, you know, all of us has a mission, right? So did you have a mission before and do you have a mission now?
Well, my mission right now is to get as many people as possible to come on Thursday night, the 19th, to our SOS Children's Villages South Africa event, and it's a networking event. The idea behind this event is that people really connect. So I'm going to talk for a couple of minutes about real connection.
Well,
it's on the 19th.
Okay. Oh, really? Okay.
And I've told people to bring business cards, and then we're having the head of SOS Children's Villages South Africa just give an idea of what it is and how people can contribute.
So how do people, you know, Is there a fee? Do they get invited?
No,
what's the bottom line?
Absolutely no fee. People come. We hope that they'll give a donation. But the idea is to create awareness and really to network and bond and connect. I like to say connect with purpose. And to find out more, they can go on to your website, right, Ashraf?
Well, you're going to tweet me and we'll see about it. And are you pushing it? Are you driving it?
I am.
Is it being sold under your name? Let's put it that way.
I am partnering with SOS Children's Villages on it. And you asked me, you know, you talk about purpose in life. And I was talking to Cherie Daniels earlier, who's with SOS Children's Villages. And we were saying there reaches a point in your life where it is nice to be able to truly give back in some way or another. And for me, this is just an extraordinary cause in terms of just legitimacy and how they run it in the inspirational stories of people who have come in as children and whose lives have changed and then they've impacted others.
So how then do you positively contribute to the SOS Children's Villages on a regular basis, not just like when you arrive now?
Well, I hope that I talk about it as much as I can. I hope I can contribute financially as much as I can. And, you know, part of what I think we're seeing in this era of social media is just create awareness. So we were saying earlier, if we can find a couple of ambassadors, you know, tweet about it, Facebook about it, tell their stories. I'm still hoping to do a really good story at some point just on a couple of the children who've come through the villages who were really at-risk kids who are now extraordinary achievers. So tell their stories. Create awareness.
Well, you may have heard me chatting to Ayanda Ali Payne earlier on. And I say former, maybe she just retired for a couple of weeks, TV anchor, radio anchor. And she's involved in this project to assist children in Dobsonville, Soweto. And made the point about it's important that you don't sell pity.
That's so interesting you say that, Ashraf. I think what they're selling is hope. It's so extraordinary. It's hope because it's hope for the children who come in. It's hope for the mothers who have found a career because they just love. They call them the SOS Children's Villages mothers. And each one that I have met is more exceptional than the rest. You know, it's hard to sit here as me, privileged person, sitting talking to you about these stories. But let me tell you about a one man in the Democratic Republic of Congo who managed to take 25 children during an extremely volatile period and take them to safety, with the youngest being 3 years old, on his own. During the tsunami, one of the SOS Children's Villages mothers in Thailand took her 5 children, because she sees them as her children. The relationship and the bond is extraordinary. They are referred to as their mother. She lifted them to safety through a hole in the roof. She nearly drowned, her children were in safety. And these are the people that you meet. So it's really changing people's lives. And they do it in the most extraordinary way.
Well, they certainly do. Chatting to Nadia Bilcik about many things in her life. So I'm just looking at, I mean, in terms of the title, CNN editorial producer, keynote speaker, you made the point, your training. And of course, you've written books, right? So here's the one, Own Your Space. Got that.
Yes, okay. I wrote Own Your Space with my wonderful co-author, Laurie Milner. And it's really about giving yourself permission. You spoke about it earlier, Ashraf. Giving yourself permission to be the person presenting the information. Being comfortable in your own skin. You know, we live in such a competitive society, don't we? Where we're constantly bombarded by people who are better, richer, smarter. And what's that inner voice that says, I am also worthy?
So what's the one line about owning your space? I mean, people must buy the book, okay? But what's the one line pitch about how do you own your space?
You own your space by starting to own your headspace and say, what am I saying to myself? I had coffee with a friend of mine this morning. She said, Nadia, when I've started to be conscious of how much negative self-talk, self-hatred, how I haven't done things well, we start with awareness. Do you know that there's research, and we find this more amongst women, that women tend to be so self-deprecating? So I'm going to ask anyone who's listening to think about how many times a day do you say, I should have done this, I could have done this, I could have done that better, why didn't I do that, I'm not perfect, versus, you know, it's okay, I'm okay. You know, it's not novel, right? I'm not telling you anything. I call a lot of what I say BLOs.
True.
Do you know
absolutely.
What a BLO is?
Well, we'll find out after that. Let's get the whole country thinking about it. Lots more to come from Nadia Bilcik, including BLOs and what that means. But let's get the news headlines now. It's 3:30.
There are some conversations you simply shouldn't miss. Afternoon Talk with Ashraf Garda on SAFM.
Okay, chatting to Nadia Bilcik, talking about giving us some acronyms. Give us that acronym again.
Okay, so I said a lot of what us as professional speakers or people in the professional development world offer you is a series of BLOs, and that is blinding lights of the obvious, right? I mean, you are so seasoned. There's very little that we share that is so novel, so revelationary that you haven't heard. But what I hope we do is bridge the gap between knowing it and doing it in application and in Own Your Space. What Laurie and I hope to do is say, many people know we should be more confident. Okay, you've been told you should network. But the question is how? I want to give you tips. I want to tell you how. And that's what I spend a lot of my life
doing. It's all obvious things you've in effect heard before, but for whatever reason, it's been, you just don't act on it.
Okay, so we're talking about negative self-talk. Mm. So the first chapter is Own Your Headspace. But do you spend a day saying, how much time do I spend criticizing myself? You know, I don't know if you've ever read a book called The Four Agreements by Don Ruiz Miguel.
No, I haven't.
And he always says, because I know when you asked me questions before, you said, what books? He says, be impeccable with your word. Now, your word is not only what you say about others, but the word is what you say to self. Dialogue to self is so important. And that's where it really all begins is, and I'm not saying be arrogant. I'm not saying have false pride. I'm saying be kinder to yourself, because the kind of confidence you need to own your space, to what Sheryl Sandberg says, lean in, to have the right to speak, comes from believing that you have the right. Now, some people are raised from the time they were little children being told, you're beautiful, you're wonderful, you're great. Some people don't have that. So at a certain age, you've got to say, maybe you're enough. Maybe you are okay. So I was telling about coffee with a friend this morning who said, I just am so angry with myself. I should have done this and I should have done that. And I said, at what point do you practice something called thought stopping? I do that a lot.
So tell us what it is.
Thought stopping is, let's say I do a segment on CNN and I don't feel that I did my absolute best. I didn't pronounce something correctly or I made a mistake. I'll go, you shouldn't have done that. And then you really flagellate yourself and you're so angry. Sometimes you just got to say stop. And then you've got to thought replace. So I spoke to you about interviewing Anthony Hopkins. And as I walked in and I started to feel less than, as one sometimes does, I thought replaced. And I thought of something that reinforced me. So I might take this moment that we're having, imprinted on my mind, becomes a permanent part of my positive emotional memory database. And I can recall it. Because by recalling it, I become what I was in that moment.
And you're suggesting we should all do that?
I say everybody that ever goes through greater impact training should develop a positive emotional memory database. That is, you literally, some of you have to have it on a wall, sometimes write it down. At this moment, from this date onwards, have an immediately accessible database of positive memory. Ashraf, I have people that I've taught and trained over 20 years who will say to me, that is the one thing that has helped them in a board meeting, give a presentation to higher-ups, in sales, doing a radio interview, standing up in front of a group of people. Funny enough, Pavarotti said, before he went in front of a live audience, he said his nerves, people like him all the time, nervous.
Yeah.
He said he used to replay the perfect aria and then sing it. I've actually got a whole video on YouTube called Combat Nerves with Nadia, because so that's the number one question
I'll leave it to you to tweet that. But I mean, even today, you know, and it's an oft-repeated one from the whole Stephen Covey begin with the end in mind. But as I was driving, I felt like tweeting this because I just felt strongly about it, that it's the most obvious thing, begin with the end in mind. And if we do that right, we'll get everything right. And many people never, ever do that, isn't it?
Isn't that the truth? And I'm curious, when you think of begin with the end in mind, what thoughts came to you?
I just think absolute pleasure and high achievement. You know, nothing
and you
else.
Want to know you've given to the world.
Yeah,
because
absolutely.
In Covey, in the 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, one of the things he asks you to do is write your obituary.
Who do you want to be?
You know, how do you want to show up in the world?
Talk about you when you, in fact, maybe we'll ask you that at the end. Yeah. Okay, so in terms of, and the books you've written, this is the one. What's the other ones?
One is called Small Changes, Big Impact. And that's about maximizing your presence and leveraging the power of your personal brand. And the other is the little book of big networking ideas. And that's the first one I wrote after 15 years of living in America, I literally decoded again what I had done to reestablish a career.
And that's the one you're gonna put into practice at your talk.
It's about a 19th, real connection. Right? Thank you. Yes, I want people to connect and not just do a card thrust. Otherwise,
so
known
how are
as
you gonna get
run.
Them to connect? Seriously, without the card thrust that we tend
the
to
the card
forget.
Thrust. Don't you feel like that? We call it a hit and run. So what I'm going to do is suggest that you say to the person next to you, what is your biggest challenge at the moment? And we could play that game right now. Now, I'm not saying you go up to a complete stranger and go, hello, Cherie Daniel, what's causing you the most pain? No. But I'm saying that it's quite interesting to say to somebody who you have a relationship with, how are you doing? You know, what's causing you the most pain at the moment? What's your biggest challenge? And people might tell you about something very personal, divorce, child, life, or they might tell you something very frivolous like the traffic. But it's interesting to know what's going on with people in order to have a real relationship.
But do you find that therefore very few people actually connect to that level? That means they will talk about trivialities like the weather and
what I do find is the people that I really connect with and have value-based relationships based on true being a giver as much as a getter. Those are the people I do business with. Those are the people that I maintain and sustain. And being successful in business in America, if you can look in the world as someone as an entire being and know that you are connecting really with them and who they are, whatever level. I recently did a whole lot of training for Porsche. And by the way, do you know that it's Porsche, not Porsche?
I do.
Because Ferdinand Porsche was Ferdinand Porsche, not Porsche.
Okay, so we're getting history lessons.
Exactly. Me too. It took me a while to say Porsche. But even the person who hired me, the HR person, to have a real connection with her, to go, yes, she's hiring me. We could have a very perfunctory relationship, but let's see who each other are so that we stay in each other's lives. So that when she one day maybe leaves the company and goes to another company, you have a relationship. So the idea behind long-term meaningful relationships is, what value can I offer you? We automatically all listen to not SAFM, but WIFM. That radio station. What's in it for me?
Yeah, well, I think that happens to most people. Let's talk. We've got about 5 or 6 minutes to go with Nadia Bulcik. So quick thought about, what do you think about South Africa from a distance?
It's complicated. I think it's complicated. I think there are remarkable things, remarkable people. What from a distance I see is the corruption. I do see the issues with education, but it's schizophrenic, if you had to say. I see the beauty, I see the energy, I see the vitality, I see the opportunities here. Juxtaposed.
What opportunities do you see?
I see opportunities for private sector people. I see opportunities if you've got new great ideas. I see people who are doing very, very interesting things. I mean, in the speaker industry, I just had a meeting with Justin Cohen, who is a fabulous dynamic speaker. And he's great. And I look, he has got so much opportunity here. In America, that market is so saturated. You know, I've been there for 20 years and I've managed to penetrate and find my niche, but it is a very saturated market for writing a book like Own Your Space or what he's written. Or so in that way, because just how mature the industry is there. So there are opportunities. I do see the complexity. But I see the complexity in America as well.
Well, tell me about, I was going to say your country, but maybe you have ambivalent whatever your country is. You have a new president coming up soon. What challenge does it bring to you and the people that you mix with?
So I will have a disclaimer that I'm not talking in any capacity as a CNNer here. I am talking as a person who believes in John Maxwell's concept of resonating at a higher level. It has been difficult to go from a Barack Obama, a dignified orator, somebody, you know, Michelle and Barack Obama for me have been very exemplary human beings. And I see the world from that. So it's been hard for me to have somebody whose rhetoric has been less than. And it's difficult from that point of view. I will also tell you this, Ashraf, socially, it has been tough because it has divided friends, families. It has become such a divisive issue. I mean, up until the election, if you voted differently to how other people, I mean, there were certain people you were persona non grata. And then it would be amazing that some people actually endorsed an individual. As a journalist, and I like to think of myself as an objective journalist, it's been hard. You know, I will tell you this as well, is that a couple of years, 18 months ago, I interviewed Daniel Silva, who's a former CNN and a very well-known author. And I jokingly said in my interview with him, I said, Daniel, you know, you've been in the news for many years. Trump's not to be taken seriously, right? I mean, he walked down an escalator. He looked at me and he said to me, Nadia, take him very seriously. Very.
That was then.
That was then. That was 18 months ago. And I remember saying to my husband at the time, who was in disbelief, and it, you know, it's symptomatic of what was going on in the country at the time. Between you and I, a total Nadia Bilczyk statement. Sometimes I feel like I'm in a Will Ferrell movie. Do you ever have that sense?
Well, we don't know. But the fact is now, so do you see Americans becoming even more divided next week? I mean, you've interviewed Meryl Streep, and she said things, and he said things about her. But I mean, do you see, like, in a week's time,
it has been very divisive. I think it will continue to be divisive. If we see things like we saw yesterday, I don't know if you saw Jim Acosta, the CNN White House correspondent, talking to Trump. Mm-hmm. Those kind of things. I think if he carries on in this vein, we're just going to see more and more of that, and there will be reaction.
There's some other comments. I was not able to take those calls or read, but here's Stima saying, Ashraf, that Nadia guest of yours is an inspirational South African who is carrying our flag higher. She's quick in thinking, speaking and acting as she met Trevor Noah. I wonder why you brought Trevor Noah into that one, Stima from KZN.
Oh, okay, I love Trevor Noah. And in fact, one of the questions Ashraf asked me to talk about was a book that I would like to recommend.
Yep.
Well, I Was Born a Crime is worth reading, Trevor Noah's book.
So you'd recommend it?
And I would recommend it. And it has resonated with so many Americans. I have so many friends in America who have a black father, white father, black mother, or what some people call themselves Blasians, Black Asians. I mean, it's a very mixed society. And it just resonated with so many people on so many levels. And I'm proud of Trevor Noah. And watching him progress, aren't you enjoying watching him?
I think so. I think we all absolutely are doing just
and
that.
And he's getting more and more comfortable.
So here's the story. We've got about 2 minutes to go. One of the things I'm involved in is a movement called Champion South Africa. And here's the blatant bottom line. We want to wrestle the Americans and all the other wannabes and say one day in 30 years' time, we want to be the number one nation in the world. What do we need to do to get there? What's the one thing we need
on
to
a
share?
Very serious level?